Steelers Week. Bob Hattie, Vinny Serrato joining us now. Shagging It Up Sports, our colleague here on The Fan, of course. He is Cordell Woodland. Cordell, good morning.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
The Ravens-Steelers rivalry, well-documented, a lot of hatred there. Usually division championships, playoff spots are on the line. The personnel changes, the coaches, however, remain the same, Tomlin and Harbaugh. So based on what you've been able to gather first couple of days of practice this week, is the import of the rivalry still kind of there for even the newer players?
I think so. I think they, especially considering, you know, how important this specific game is to the standings in the division. You know, I talked to Tyler Linderbaum yesterday and asked him, you know, are guys cognizant of the rivalry standpoint between these two teams, but just in terms of the importance of this game on the division standings. And, you know, he acknowledged that they are, that is something that they are aware of. And, you know, they take that into consideration in going into this game. So, you know, Hobbs didn't have a lot to say yesterday. You know, you could kind of tell listening to him talk that it's Steelers week right now. And I think those guys are locked in.
Patrick Queen had some comments that the Ravens basically didn't even offer him a chance to return. But any surprise there? I guess, Cordell, going back, we've talked to you about this. Once they extended Roquan Smith, it appeared as though that was a foregone conclusion anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really say I'm surprised necessarily. Now, I can't say that I necessarily agree with it. You know, I understand the dynamics of they paid Roquan and everything. I would have at least liked to have seen them pick up his fifth-year option, get another year out of him, but that didn't happen. And like he said, they didn't extend an offer to him. I think the killer would be if Patrick Queen ends up looking better than Roquan Smith on Sunday. And considering how both guys have played to this point and how they're trending, that wouldn't be a shock to me. But, yeah, I mean, look, that's just how it goes at times. You know, guys want to stay where they're drafted, or guys just want to feel wanted. And in Queen's case, he probably didn't feel wanted by the Ravens. And now he's, you know, with a team that obviously did want his services. I think it's working out well for him. The Ravens have Trenton Simpson, who has been solid, you know, and obviously Roquan hasn't had the year that he'd like to have. But I think all in all, it'll work out for both sides.
All right, Cordell, what's your gut tell you? You know, being out there talking to players, listening to the coach talk, what changes are going to be on defense?
Oh, I mean, it's tough to tell, to be honest. I mean, the biggest change this week specifically, and it would be a negative change, would be if Kyle Hamilton's not able to play, because that is kind of
right.
Brings into a lot of questions on what are they even going to look like in some of their personnel packages. I mean, I would imagine that means a lot more Eddie Jackson, a lot more Ardarius Washington, who's gotten to play a lot anyway. But I think Washington will probably be the guy that's playing a little bit of the Kyle Hamilton role. Now, he's not going to be lined up in linebacker the way that Kyle Hamilton has been at times. But I think you'll see Washington come down to the nickel at times, split sometimes with Millett in that spot. And then he and Jackson will kind of flip-flop on the back end with Marcus Williams. But in terms of changes, I mean, maybe we'll see them look a little more basic this week in terms of pre-snap. You know, maybe they're not disguising as much but before the play. But because the Steelers offense allows you to kind of do that, you know what they want to do, and they show you what they want to do kind of the way that they line up. They want to run the ball, and they're going to take their shots down the field. So I kind of think that they're going to play it the way, you know, that they probably need to and go a little more basic.
All right, Cordell. Tre'Davious White. See, watching him on film, I kind of like some of the things that he can do and what he can bring just because he's super smart, too, and he's got ball skills. I don't know. I could see where you have a rotation of he and Stevens in there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious to see what Tre'Davious looks like. We got to talk to him the other day, and definitely, you know, if nothing else, he has a high football IQ. He has played at an all-pro level at, you know, at a certain point in his career. I'm curious to see how they go about using him and how much they use him. And with the way Stevens has played, yeah, I mean, he calls into question, could he be the guy that turns out to be the odd man out a little bit and have some of his play time taken away. I think you'll start to see Nate Wiggins play a little more. But yeah, I am curious to see how they use Tre'Davious White. Harbs was flat out asked about Stevens going to safety the other day, and he shot that down. And I believe he was asked last week about the role for Tre'Davious White, and he immediately went to corner. He didn't even mention safety. So yeah, I expect him to get some run. I don't know if this week will be the case. We'll see. I mean, he's been out there in practice, so I am curious to see how they use him.
Cordell, I'm kind of with you. I know what they want to do, and they want to throw moon balls. I think they threw like 12 against Washington last week, at least 12, you know, and he was, I think, 3 for 12. And I think that kind of plays, you know, Wiggins, I think that's great for Wiggins, you know, because Williams didn't play that much. And, you know, Pickens is kind of an undisciplined route runner, and Humphrey. So I think it kind of plays into the Ravens' secondary a little bit better.
With the deep balls, you're saying?
Yeah, you know, but Chin, I mean, you watched that game last week. Chin had 12 tackles or whatever and a pick. You know, Marcus Williams has got to be really active to be able to, because you got to help the corners on these, on the moon balls.
I mean, I would like to agree, but watching that Bengals game, it just scares the life out of me. I mean, we're watching Ja'Marr Chase run down the heart of the defense, and Marcus Williams doesn't even acknowledge him on that deep post touchdown that he scored. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, yes, in a sense, it does help the Ravens because, like we said, you know what they want to do. They're going to take their shots up the sideline. Pickens doesn't do really a great job a lot of times of giving his his quarterback a ton of space on some of those up the sideline types of fly routes. He doesn't give the quarterback a lot of space, but at the same time, he's had success making those plays against the Ravens, whether it's Marlon Humphrey at times or Brandon Stevens, who we all know struggles to find the ball in general. And the one pick he did get, they overturned the call. So I'd like to think, you know, it's going to be easier said than done, but I don't know, man. It's been times that I feel like the Ravens should have made plays and they haven't. And you mentioned them going, 3 for 12 on some of those moon balls. I think they'll take that. You know, I think the Steelers will take that, especially if two of them turn into touchdowns the way that it did last week against Washington. The way this secondary is played, I mean, my expectations are very, very low.
Now, Cordell, I see a huge game for Travis Jones and Matt Abike because the right guard, watch film on him, Cordell. He stinks for Pittsburgh, you know, and he's a rookie, and the center's a rookie. So I see a big game, you know, in run and pass for the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, look, those two guys are studs anyway. Matt Abike is coming off of his best game of the season, and I think Travis Jones, as he gets healthier, you know, he's going to get back to the way that he had played for the most part of this season. And even last week, I mean, De'Ron Payne was in the backfield quite a bit in both the run and the pass game. He didn't always finish the sack, but he was back there a lot. And Najee Harris didn't practice yesterday. I mean, I think as the week goes on, we'll see what happens today. But I'd be kind of surprised if he doesn't play. That dude's kind of a warrior. But if he doesn't, I mean, that would be a huge boost for the Ravens. But look, Najee probably leads the league in running into the back of your blockers anyway. So I'm curious to find out how much the Steelers actually want to run the ball in this game, because the pass game has worked so well for all of these offenses that played the Ravens. I don't even know how much you want to run the ball, even though that's what Pittsburgh wants to do. I'm curious to see how they play this game, but I'm hoping that Matt Abike is able to build off Thursday and Travis Jones can at least start to look healthier. And if he is, man, I think he'll be a big time problem.
Cordell Will, NVIDIA at 81.057. The Fan, Ravens 3-point favorites at Pittsburgh, over under 47.5. So the odds makers at ESPN Bet certainly see a shootout. When we're talking to you next week, Cordell, who's going to be in first place in the AFC North?
It's such a toss-up type of game, man. A part of me feels like Pittsburgh's going to win this game. I'm going to be honest with you. They have kind of the mojo right now. They're in more of a rhythm, I think. I think the Ravens have the best player in Lamar Jackson. The fact that Lamar will actually be able to play against Pittsburgh definitely boosts their chances. But I just think Pittsburgh's got a lot going their way, and they don't have to dominate the Ravens. They don't even have to play well. I mean, the Ravens could just give them the game, and the way Pittsburgh wins, they just need a slither of hope, and they just find a way to capitalize on that. I think they probably end up still in this game off something fluke, and I wouldn't be surprised if it comes down to special teams, where Pittsburgh has an elite special team, whereas Baltimore, they've had some questions on all phases of their special teams unit this year. So it wouldn't shock me if this game really did come down to the leg of one of these kickers or a mistake being made on special teams.
Cordell Woodland, Shaking It Up Sports, our Ravens, Orioles, Terps reporter. Cordell, always great to talk to you. Enjoy the rest of your Total Request Thursday. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Cordell.
Thanks, guys.
Vinny at 81057, The Fan. Did anyone else get the joke? Vinny said right guard stinks. Get it? Right guard deodorant stay. I don't know. Maybe,
I didn't even get it.
Maybe I'm too sharp for the room here.
Vinny and Hades with
brought to you by Box Hill Pizzeria and Crab Cakes. The best crab cakes in Harford County.
1057 The Fan.
Whip around here on this Total Request Thursday. Vinny and Hades, Nolan McGraw. Got notes from the North. AFC North, that is, coming up bottom of the hour, so let's get through this as quickly as possible, but be informative at the same time. Maryland football, as we talked about, 4-5, hosting Rutgers 5-4 this Saturday, 6 o'clock at CQ Stadium. Iowa's a home game, too. Then they go to Penn State. Okay. So the next two, they have to win Maryland the next two games to get into a bowl game. Bob, it's as simple as that.
And hopefully they don't. If they lose to Rutgers, Bob, the only people that'll be at the Iowa game is Iowa fans.
Yeah, and Maryland's 6-point favorites, though, so the odds makers like something there. Rutgers wins, they do become bowl eligible. Greg Schiano tomorrow, College Hoops down at the Xfinity Center. Maryland taking on 15th-ranked Marquette. Cam Jones is the leading scorer for the Golden Warriors. Golden Eagles, formerly the Warriors for many years. The Golden Eagles, Shaka Smart's a hell of a coach. He's been to Final Fours, and they're coming to Xfinity Center. We'll talk about that with Walt Williams coming up at 12:30. Stay tuned for that. In the NBA last night, Spurs took on the Wizards. What did you ask me yesterday during Buy or Sell? Would Alex Saar make a stop?
For one, one moment in the game. Did he have one moment? Well, where either he dunked on Wemby or he stopped Wemby.
Let's go to Valley Sports and see how that worked out.
Guarded by George. No, Wembanyama. Guarded by Kispert. Turns, shoots, and swishes for 50. He's not human. He's an alien.
Who scored 50 points? That's Valley Sports' Victor Wembanyama. 50 points, 6 boards, 3 assists, 3 blocks as the Spurs beat the Wiz 139-130. Greg Popovich, the Hall of Fame coach, suffered a mild stroke, which explains now why he's not coaching the team for a couple of weeks. And, best wishes to him and his family as he hopefully recovers and gets back on those sidelines. Jordan Poole had 42 for the Wizards, and it still wasn't enough. But how about Bob Carrington, Baltimore? 13 points, 5 boards, 5 assists for Washington in the loss. It was Chicago. The Bulls holding off the Knicks 124-123. Jalen Smith, sticks, Mount St. Joe, University of Maryland. He had 4 rebounds in the win for New York. Zach LaVine, UCLA Bruin, he dropped 31 in the win for New York. It was Oklahoma City 106-88 over New Orleans. Jalen Williams had 31 for the Thunder. How about Aaron Wiggins? Maryland Terrapin, 10 points, 5 boards, 3 assists there. It was the Lakers over Memphis 128-123. LeBron James, third straight triple-double at 39 years old, is the Lakers undefeated at home. Santi Aldama, Loyola Greyhounds, having a breakout kind of third season for the Grizzlies, minus Ja Morant. Yeah, 15.7 boards, 5 assists, 3 steals. It was Sacramento, 127-104 over the Phoenix Suns. Kevin Huerter, University of Maryland, at 22 points, 6 boards, 5 assists, 3 steals. That's filling a stat line, everybody. Damian Lee, Calvert Hall, he had 4 points there. So that's your NBA fun. On the ice last night down in D.C., Capitals were looking good, then they weren't, and then this happened.
He's bracketed there by a couple Leaf defenders. Ovechkin fires, stepping out on the angle. Wall made the save. It's bounced ahead. Breakaway chance for Tavares. From the bad angle, he scores. Toronto comes all the way back. from 3-1 down in the final 6 minutes.
That was a frustrating. It was frustrating because the Caps were winning 3-1, playing really well. And then with, like Joe B. just said, with 6 minutes to go, you know, Nylander scored. And then they got on a power play and scored with 48 seconds left in the game to tie it 3-3. Then in overtime, the Caps, Ovi, it's 3-on-3 in overtime. And the puck came to Ovi. And nobody in front of him except the goalie. And he was probably, 20 feet out, slap shot. And that was basically it. Ovi's either going to win it or they're going to lose. Because puck goes back off the goalie, goes back down the other end, and they have odd man advantage. And Tavares puts puck in a net. And then it was all she wrote.
Heartbreak City down in D.C., 4-3 final score in overtime. Caps now 10-4-1 on the year. They're at Colorado, 9-8 tomorrow night. But Colorado's won three in a row.
And they're on, Bob, they've had a favorable schedule, a lot of home games. They're going on the road. They're going on a West Coast trip. Things are going to get a little bit more difficult for the Caps now.
And Winnipeg's 15-1. They won 7-0. Where the hell did this come from?
I think that shocked the NHL world. 15-1. I think I don't even know if they made the playoffs last year, Bob. That's what's like, and Edmonton's kind of taking a dive, and it's been topsy turvy.
So that's tomorrow on the ice for the Caps. It is the Whip Around, Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Here, this total request Thursday. This day in sports history. It's November the 14th. Couple of things of note. About 1966 at the Houston Astrodome, Muhammad Ali knocked out Cleveland Williams in the third round, defending his heavyweight championship. He's had much greater wins in historical significance. Muhammad Ali, Sonny Liston twice, George Foreman, Frazier twice, Norton twice. I mean, name a dude, he beat him. Quarry twice. But a lot of boxing historians think, and the late, great Bert Sugar was one of them, that this was Ali at his ultimate best. Cleveland Williams was a big puncher, not a Hall of Fame fighter, but if he clipped you, it was lights out. And Muhammad Ali's speed, power just destroyed him. So a lot of boxing people think on this night in 1966, that was Ali at his peak performance. About 1993, Miami Dolphins beat the Eagles 19-14. With the win, Don Shula became the all-time winningest coach in NFL history, passing George Halas, a record he still holds to this day. Belichick was breathing down his neck, though.
Oh, he'll be back. He'll be back to start breathing again.
Do we believe in the interweb chatter? Jacksonville, perhaps?
I'm Belichick, Bob, if I'm Belichick, the job that I would want, the Bears.
Oh, Eberflus.
Yeah, because I got a quarterback. I got a pretty good defense. I got receivers. I need to. And Belichick even said it on TV on the Manning cast. The problem with the Bears is the offensive line. I mean, they want to play finesse on the outside with all these weapons, but they can't protect the quarterback.
And we'll talk to Mike Harmon about his Bears at 1:30 Fox Sports as we talk real and fantasy football with him. And on this day, 51 years ago, get the bleep out of here. Jim Palmer, Cakes, wins the first of his three Cy Young Awards. Outdistanced Nolan Ryan for it, 22-9, 240. Jim Palmer, 19 complete games, 6 shutouts, 296 innings pitched. Get out of here. Finished second in the MVP voting to Reggie Jackson that year, Jim Palmer. Hall of Famer, and rightfully so. It's Vinny at 81.057 The Fan. It is this total request Thursday. Notes from the North coming up next. Ray Fittipaldo, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, joining us. Scott Petrak, BrownZone.com. And Richard Skinner from WKRC 12 in Cincinnati. Talk about the division. Big game for the Bengals. Browns playing out the string. And obviously, Ravens Steelers playing for first place.
Bengals.
Chase to the end zone. That's a Bengal touchdown.
Browns.
Toss down. Miles Garrett gets home.
Steelers. Ravens.
Lamar winding up. Going deep for Bateman. He's got it.
The toughest division in football. Notes from the North. Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan.
Oh, and it's a big weekend in the AFC North for sure. Bob Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw, Vinny and Haney. Ravens Steelers getting it on for first place in the division. 1 o'clock Sunday, Acrisure Stadium. And we'll start it off in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Let's welcome back to the show Ray Fittipaldo. Ray, good morning. How you feeling on this day? First place is on the line. Ravens are favored in this game. You got Patrick Queen, Deshaun Elliott going up against their former team. Of course, Tomlin and Harbaugh tied to the hip almost. So it's almost like it's an old-school Steelers-Ravens game heading into this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at it. You know, Cam Hayward has been in the league for 14 years now. Every year it seems like it comes down to the Steelers or the Ravens for the win the division title. I think in 9 of those 13 years, it's been one of those two teams. And the way the standings are looking this year, I think we're in for it again, and I think this game on Sunday is going to go a long way toward deciding who is the champion of the North at the end of the season.
Hey, Ray, on defense, do you think that the Steelers in the first half against Washington played 2 D tackles? In the second half, they played 3. What do you think they're going to do to stop Derrick Henry?
Yeah, I mean, it's similar in some ways because Lamar and Jaden Daniels are similar types of quarterbacks, but there's really no way of preparing for Derrick Henry. Now, the Steelers have done well against Henry in the past when he was with the Titans. You know, they traditionally have a strong you know, front with Cam Hayward. You know, he was big in those previous matchups against Henry. But, guys, this is a different animal. It's a dual threat now. You got to worry about Henry, the wear and tear of, you know, just wearing you down over 60 minutes, and the fact that he could hit the home run. And then you turn around, if they want to play action or if they want to have Lamar throw it, you know, he's got all kinds of weapons. So this is unlike any Ravens offense I think the Steelers have seen. I know a lot of people are going to make – you know, look at the record of the Steelers versus Jackson, you know, how well they've done against Jackson in the past. But to me, this Ravens offense is a lot better than that, and I think this is going to be a totally different game.
Now, the injuries, I mean, looking at the injury report, they had a lot of guys out. But, I mean, Highsmith for Preston Smith, that's a huge drop-off in my opinion. And then if Jackson doesn't play a corner, another huge drop-off. What do you think is going to happen on the injury front?
Yeah, I mean, losing Highsmith is that's going to be huge for the Steelers. He's one of the best, I'd say one of the most underrated outside linebackers, 3-4 backers in the league. He can rush. He can defend. They did go out and get Preston Smith, so I think he could help a little bit. But, you know, on the positive side for the Steelers, Nick Herbig has missed the past month with a hamstring injury. He was rushing really well before he got injured. He had 2.5 sacks in the first 4 games, really, mostly as a backup. So they are going to get Herbig back. And then when you look at Jackson, possibly being out, he's got a soft tissue. I think he's got a hamstring injury as well. So that would be another blow to the Steelers' defense. But they still got 2 more days. They're out there practicing right now as we speak. So we'll see if Jackson perks up by the end of the week.
Ray Fittipaldo, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Biddy and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. Ray, last thing for you, Patrick Queen. We mentioned him in the opening of the segment. Came to Pittsburgh, obviously, from Baltimore. Has he lived up to expectations? Are they satisfied with his performance? How's he trending right now?
He's trending up. You know, the first, I'd say, 6 games of the season, there was a lot of pressure on him. And I don't think he was putting up the stats or playing as well as he wanted to. They put a lot of responsibility on his shoulders. You know, he's the red dot, or excuse me, the green dot guy. He's calling the defenses. It's his first year in the defense. So I think, you know, he was kind of playing tentative, you know, first 6 games of the season. I thought he played his best game of the season against the Commanders, led the team with 7 tackles, two behind the line of scrimmage. And I think now that he knows the defense, he's playing faster. And I think you're seeing that talent come to the fore. And listen, he talked about it yesterday. The Ravens didn't offer him a contract. He's going to have a big chip on his shoulder on Sunday. So I'm sure he's looking forward to this game more than anyone.
Well, as we say around here, get in that whammy lance, if you know what I'm saying. Patrick Queen, Ray Fittipaldo, appreciate the time. Have fun on Sunday.
Thanks, Ray.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There's Ray Fittipaldo. Let's go to Cleveland now as the Browns go to New Orleans, taking on the Saints. Let's welcome back from BrownZone.com, Scott Petrak. Scott, good morning. Thanks for your time, as always. And as we see the Browns sitting here at 2-7, one of those wins against the Ravens, of course. How did it get to this point? As we look back and we've got, you know, a couple months plus into the season, how have we gotten here? Like we're having a mafia meet down. How did it get to this point?
Yeah, it's a great question. It starts with the offense, and that starts with Deshaun Watson. They expected him to be a lot different this year. They tried to, you know, restructure the offense to suit his skill set, and it just didn't work. He wasn't very good. The guys around him weren't particularly good. They had protection issues, which he didn't help. They dropped passes, all of it. And, you know, so the offense has been bad, like bottom of the league bad. And then, like a bad football team does, the rest of the team has its issues at the wrong moment. You know, they give up a big kick return for a touchdown. They give a big, big punt return and sets up a touchdown. Defense has a couple miscommunications that lead to two touchdowns the week ago before the bye. So it's just everything's going wrong, but it starts with the poor performance of the offense and poor performance of the quarterback.
Now, what's the attitude of the players?
Yeah, I think it's still pretty good. You know how it is. Guys are clinging to, even though there's no chances they're going to go to the playoffs, guys are clinging to what if they go on a run, that kind of thing. But it's a veteran locker room. I think it's got good leadership up top. So I haven't seen any lack of effort. I haven't seen anything like that. It's just frustration that they have fallen so short of the expectations. Because this is a team that was talking about going to the Super Bowl.
Now, is their Super Bowl probably a week from tonight at home against the Steelers?
Yeah, I mean, that's a big one. You know, if you talk about, is there any chance to, quote-unquote, save the season? And they go down to New Orleans. You know, that's a winnable game on Sunday. Then they come back home and host the Steelers on a short week, Thursday night. The Steelers coming off the matchup with the Ravens. You know, could the Browns win two in a row? Yeah. And then all of a sudden they're 4-7. They have a little bit of momentum, which they've been unable to sustain any kind of momentum. So that'll be a big game. It's supposed to start a stretch of primetime games for the Browns. I don't know how many of those will stay in primetime, but at least they have the one next Thursday night against the Steelers.
Scott Petrak, BrownZone.com. Scott, last thing for you. Playing out the string, with all due respect, what are the Browns looking for? A couple of players that they're going to look to see maybe could be part of a bright future moving ahead here.
Sure. I mean, I don't know how realistic this is, but I think I want to get a legitimate look at Jameis Winston. You know, he's your starting quarterback now. Can he be a bridge quarterback? Can he be part of your future, even though he's on a one-year contract? Because they have nothing but doubts at quarterback right now and uncertainty because, you know, Deshaun Watson's future obviously doesn't appear to be here. So they got to figure that out. And then Cedric Tillman, since they traded Amari Cooper to Buffalo, Tillman has taken on a much bigger role and had a lot of success. And they're going to have to rebuild this whole passing game, and they need to find out if he can be a legitimate piece of that. And then one more guy is defensive end Isaiah McGuire. They traded Za'Darius Smith to the Lions at the deadline. McGuire's a fourth-round pick from 2023. Has shown flashes, but not a lot. So they're going to get a long look at him over these final eight games.
Scott Petrak, BrownZone.com. Scott, appreciate the time as always. Enjoy the Big Easy this weekend.
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks, guys.
There he is, Scott Petrak. Now let's go to Cincinnati. The Bengals' big game coming up this Sunday night against the Chargers. He's WKRC-12 in Cincinnati. Let's welcome back Richard Skinner. Richard, appreciate the time as always. Joe Burrow's thrown 9 touchdown passes against the Ravens. Has nothing to show from a win perspective. But yet here they are, even though it's 4-6, a chance to make a late run. We know the urgency is certainly there. Are they built for speed down the stretch here?
I'll tell you, the Wednesday practice, yesterday's practice, was one of the least inspiring 30 minutes I've watched in a long time, and that was surprising. It had very little juice to it. Maybe I read too much into it. I wasn't the only one that thought that as we walked away from it. Because to your point, despite all the things that have gone wrong, you face a team that you may have to have a tiebreaker with this week in the Chargers. You still have winnable games in front of you at Tennessee, Cleveland at home, at Dallas, a chance, two more games or two games with Pittsburgh still, a game that could be a tiebreaker game with Denver. So there's a little sign of life in theory, but boy, yesterday was not a great indicator, in my opinion.
Is Higgins going to be back for the Charger game Sunday night?
Yeah, I think I'd lean that way. He was a limited participant in practice yesterday. That's a good first step, obviously. We'll see what he does today. They're still another hour away or so from practice. I'm going to guess they're going to go indoors because it's raining, and you sure don't want a guy with a bad quad slipping and sliding on a wet practice field. So I would lean that way, even if it's not a ton of snaps. It's just maybe even a handful of snaps just to take some pressure off Jamar Chase. I mean, you know, what he did against Baltimore was otherworldly, but, you know, teams like to try to take him away with two or three players, and if it's not T. Higgins on the other side, there really aren't a ton of other options.
Well, Sunday night, like you said, is a really important game for both teams, really. And the Chargers, their defense, especially the pass defense, is excellent. So the Bengals' offense is going to get tested, and they're going to have to score points because we know that their defense is similar to the Ravens.
Yeah, no, it's not very good. You saw that. You saw a weird 2.5 really good quarters of football against the Ravens, and then came the avalanche of 4 touchdowns and 4 straight drives, and that's kind of been the MO when they play good offenses. It's not a dynamic Charger offense, but it's a Charger offense that, I mean, you talk about building the Jim Harbaugh mold. They want to run it. They do have a quarterback who's capable of throwing it. They still don't ask him to do a ton, and they don't turn the ball over. They only turn the ball over 4 times all season long. And then the defense on the other side has given up 13 points per game, in part because the offense doesn't put them in bad spots, and in part because they're really good against the run, against the pass. It's funny, you look at their stats, and it's, you know, it's not one or two guys who stand out. It's a group. It's you know, kind of the amalgamation of all the parts, and those are tough teams to play against. And I'm actually writing a column about that today, about kind of the strength of the Bengals' offense going against the strength of the Chargers, which is their defense, and who's going to win that battle and how and why. And honestly, the last two really good defenses the Bengals faced, and I think Cleveland's in that group, was Cleveland and the Giants' front. They had a hard time with the Giants' front, and they won those games, but they scuffled on offense in those games. And to your point, the way this defense is played, even if they play well, I just don't see them keeping the Chargers out of at least the low 20s. Now, are you capable of scoring in the low 20s, the mid-20s against that Chargers defense? That's a big, big ask.
Richard Skinner talking about the Cincinnati Bengals Sunday Night Football taking on the Chargers. Huge game for both teams, obviously. Playoff ramifications are right there for you to enjoy, everybody. WKRC 12 in Cincinnati. Richard, appreciate the time as always. Have fun Sunday night.
Thanks, appreciate it.
There's Richard Skinner, everybody. It's Vinny and Haney, 105.7 The Fan. We'll come back, reset. Got news from the desk coming up top of the hour. Going to hear from Patrick Queen. Going to hear from John Harbaugh. Going to hear from Lamar Jackson. All sorts of other people ahead of the first place matchup between the Steelers and Ravens coming up Sunday at 1 o'clock. Acrisure, Ravens 3-point favorites. Count that dough. Hopefully at 12:15, buy or sell. And the Wizard, Walt Williams, will break down the Terps Marquette happening tomorrow. You can hear it on The Fan. But the over-under, and we were just talking about this with Ray Fittipaldo, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, he sees fireworks on the scoreboard. Usually this is a smash-mouth, kick-in-the-face kind of game. It is a division game. But then again, as we saw with the Bengals, that doesn't mean, you know, jack squat. But 47.5, I don't know. Nolan, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean,
I see high-scoring game here.
Well, we know it's easy to score on the Ravens' defense.
Right.
And, you know, Vinny, I have more to say about the Steelers' defense, but everything I've heard from him so far is that, you know, while they have been impressive this year, they certainly haven't faced an offense like the Ravens yet or a rushing threat that the Ravens present, and they could be had in that part of the game. So that would be encouraging if you're a Ravens fan.
And what is it, 47.5 you said, Bob? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've got it a little bit over. You know, I think it's going to be a little bit over. I think both teams are. If one team can't score, then they may get blown out. That's what I'm saying.
I saw a post on social media. I think it was an NFL player, former NFL player, and I apologize, can't remember the name. Said if the Ravens offense had to play against the Ravens defense, they'd score 70 points. That's how good the offense is versus how poor the defense is. And, you know, hey, Najee Harris, he was on a heater until last week.
But he averaged 2.4 yards per carry last week. And, you know, to me, it's not Najee. It's the O-line. A lot of it is you know, just to give you a little indication before we do the film it next hour, but their offensive line, what I see with their offensive line is they cannot hold blocks. The O-line cannot hold blocks. which plays into the Ravens' D-line, you know, because they can punch, lock out, and they can shed and get off blocks. And that's why he has no room to run. And the other thing the O-line can't do, Bob, for Pittsburgh is they don't get up to the linebackers. You know how we talked about, which game was it where Roquan had three tackles? Denver.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they went right straight to Roquan and Simpson. Now, against here, I'll be disappointed if Roquan doesn't have double-digit tackles, because those guys are going to try to double those guys, and they're going to have a hard time doubling, you know, the guys up front, which will leave Roquan and Simpson free, which I think it's going to be hard for them to run. And, you know, is Pittsburgh going to go out of who they are? Is Arthur going to leave his two and three tight end sets to throw it every down?
Nolan, how much do you miss Patrick Queen, understanding the business side of football, sports in general, even baseball with this unlimited salary cap? Yeah, you have your luxury tax. I mean, at some point in time, look, Boston, for instance, the Red Sox drew a line in the sand when it comes to spending, and that might cost the Yankees Juan Soto, but we knew the Ravens were kind of up against it cap-wise to keep Patrick Queen around.
Right, and if the Ravens' defense was actually playing very well or close to what they were doing last year, then nobody would really be griping at all. And even still, I don't think people are missing him much. I mean, Trenton Simpson's not really one of the problems with this defense. He's playing just fine as far as I'm concerned. And would Queen's presence make Roquan better? I don't know. I mean, there's been such a mess this year defensively, trying to figure out who's to blame for certain things. But if Patrick Queen was still here, I don't think it changes much for him individually or for the Ravens defense as a whole. And financially, like you said, it was a non-starter.
I think it's exactly like Santander, Bob, for the Orioles. You know, because they have a young guy, you know, to step in, and they can save a ton of money. He's going to be a free agent, just like Queen, you know. And they drafted Simpson, put that young guy in, cheaper labor. I think that's a pretty good comparison.
Well, I don't know if Kerstad's going to be bringing what Santander brought to the table defensively.
Well, Simpson's not Queen yet either.
And Kerstad was the second pick in the draft.
Yeah.
Simpson was a third-round draft pick. But either way, I get your point to some level. But the biggest loss for the Ravens defensively, is it the players that have moved on, Patrick Queen included, or is it McDonald? Is it Anthony Weaver? Or is it Denard Wilson? All of the above.